Morning, everybody. 2:08 in the a.m. here on 720 WGN. Joining us on the phone right now is Mika McKinnon. She's a disaster researcher and scientist for fiction, she says, with an irrepressible curiosity about our wonderfully weird universe. Mika, thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, we appreciate you jumping on. We reached out to you because there was a National Geographic story about what happens in a time of pandemic when there are natural disasters. I know that there was an earthquake, a minor one in California a couple of weeks ago, back on March 22nd. There was one in Croatia, a big one in Croatia. It says in the story here that a recent NOAA forecast warns that 1.2 million people throughout the Midwest will face risks of major flooding this spring. Colorado State University says we're going to have more Atlantic hurricanes this year that touch down. There were just those huge tornadoes in Tennessee. And we've got this time where we're worried about being out and in front of a bunch of people, and here's this time of season where all these things could happen. As we head towards fall, there's probably going to be wildfires. There's all sorts of natural disasters that happen all the time, and we're wondering and starting to think about it. And I imagine we shouldn't even be thinking about this because we've got enough to worry about. But you start letting your mind run away with you, like, what happens if other things start going wrong?
Yeah, that's the biggest problem about having a disaster is that it uses up slack in the system. So normally you try and have a little bit of extra resources. It's like having a stopping room while driving, so that if someone slams on your brakes, you have time to slow down before you crash into them. Mm. You want the same thing on a social level of having enough resources to be able to distribute them around. If there's a fire in one area and all the firefighters go there, you can pull extra people from the surrounding communities and bring them in. If you need to evacuate, you can put them in hotels nearby. Except for we can't do that right now because we're using up all of those resources on dealing with the pandemic. So it's a really stressful time to be thinking about disasters. I wish there was a simple solution to that. It's mostly one of our primary jobs right now is to not do foolish things that increase our risk. Like, just everybody behave themselves. This is the wrong time to do things like set off fireworks in dry brush. Just don't.
Yeah. Well, and even just on a small level, even fireworks at home, as we get to the 4th of July, I imagine that most municipalities, either because of social distancing or because of their lack of tax funds, are going to be kind of broke, and maybe we'll decide that, yeah, let's not have fireworks this year, which might mean more people saying, well, we're going to do them at home. And at a time where hospitals kind of got a lot going on, you don't want to be coming in with a half-missing finger, right?
Yeah, I would really prefer that everybody just not do that. It's just everybody take it for granted that we do not have the extra resources to deal with any disasters we can prevent. And in a lot of ways, that's actually really reassuring. So we've got fire season coming up, and it looks like the weather forecast for it is it's going to be a very bad fire season. But in a normal year, about half of all fires are caused by people, either not putting their campfires out correctly, or flicking cigarette butts out the window, or having hot machinery on dry grass, or deliberately setting fires. So if we can rein all that in and have half as many fires as normal just by being more careful, then we're on for a good path. It's never too late to make things less bad. We can make good choices right now, even in these rough circumstances.
Do you think that that's likely, though? I worry that there's so much of our energy, our mental energy, devoted to what's going on and the stress of that and trying to be careful and be safe and protect our loved ones and be smart, that I worry that we get to a point where it's just kind of overloads us. And either A, we quit being good about it. I do think there's going to be a breaking point. And I've been happy where we are here in Chicago. The weather's been kind of off, or it hasn't been great. It hasn't been like a really warm spring. And I'm thankful for that, because if it got really, really nice out, I think a lot of us would be like, oh, forget it. Let's just get out of the house. You know, you start to get a little stir crazy with things for the people that, you know, have been at home most of the time. And I worry that when it comes to all these other safety issues or other things we need to think of on top of this, people are going to be like, you know what? I don't have the bandwidth for it. I'm not processing that. I'm not being good about all these other things. It's enough to stay mentally in with this one big thing right now.
Fatigue fatigue is absolutely a very real risk. But on the upside, a lot of these things we're doing for pandemic prep can double up for doing preparation on a personal level for all sorts of other disasters. You've already got your personal supplies at home because you're reducing the number of grocery trips you're doing. You're already doing social check-ins with people, looking in on each other. And we've got a lot more out-of-area contact than we normally do. I know I'm calling my parents more often. I'm checking in on somebody who's not in the same geographic region as me, which is perfect in terms of emergency preparedness and disaster preparedness. We're doing a lot more checking in on our neighbors while maintaining some sort of social connectivity, even though we're keeping that social and physical distance. All of that is disaster preparation. It's normally the number one piece of advice I give for disaster preparation is throw a party and invite your neighbors. That doesn't work right now. Please don't do it. But normally it's great advice because it creates these community bonds and these social ties. And the stronger your social ties are, the more resilient you are to disaster. It's like putting coins of goodwill into a piggy bank that you can smash open and spend on bad days.
Yeah, I hope that that's how that works, that we're building up these other ideas and things. Now, you have worked a lot in fiction and in science fiction stuff on TV series like Stargate Atlantis and Stargate Universe. When you look at what's happening in the world right now, do you think, boy, somebody could have written this? Or do you think nobody would have bought this? They wouldn't have believed that this is exactly how it's going.
Oh, there's definitely a series of cascading events. So there's one of the plausible real life things that could happen that I always kind of lay out as the, and then this goes wrong, and then this goes wrong, and then this goes wrong, is having a really big earthquake in the Pacific Northwest. It's actually the same earthquake we see in the movie San Andreas. Mm-hmm. They stole the earthquake from the Pacific Northwest. It's a good earthquake. It's just too far south. So we have that earthquake, we have the tsunami, all of that, and then the weeks afterwards you have no sanitation systems, so then you have the disease start spreading. Well, you still have aftershocks, you don't have power, you've got water having tsunami coming in and destroying a bunch of infrastructure, all of that, and you have power outages, there's nuclear facilities up in my area in the Pacific Northwest. You can have all of these cascading events on top of each other, one after another, after another, and after another. And that's really the hardest type of disaster to plan for, because it's unexpected cascading events, and they tend to amplify each other. It's once one thing goes wrong, then everything feels worse. Yeah. And this gets to this idea you had before about, well, what if people get fatigued? I'm actually finding people are getting a lot more aware and alert about disasters. So you listed the earthquakes in California. There's also been earthquakes in Utah and in Idaho recently. Mm. Both places you don't normally think of having earthquakes, but they happen. It's kind of rare. But everybody noticed because they're at home and they're bored and they're paying attention. And so everybody felt the earthquake and everybody reported it in. That Anak Krakatoa in Indonesia, yes. The volcano yeah. that grew out of the old Krakatoa volcano, it erupted. And again, everybody noticed.
Well, it was a huge eruption. Mika, how are you going to miss that one? Did you see the pictures of that? It was amazing.
Well, so small little itty-bitty problem with that. Those pictures were from the last eruption,
and I know this.
Yeah, this is because that eruption was so big, it actually blasted out the side of the volcano. So if you see any eruption from Anak Krakatoa that looks like it's coming from a volcano, like there's anything resembling a mountain there that is pointy at all, that is from at least 2018.
But didn't I read
in 2018, okay. The top of the mountain got blown off.
But didn't I read that this one did spew stuff like 9 miles up in the air? I mean, it was a huge explosion, wasn't it? The most recent Krakatoa?
Yeah, Krakatoa is always bad-tempered. It is a volcano that knows how to erupt very firmly and make sure you know what's going on. On the upside, it's also an uninhabited island, and it happened to be in the right direction and timing and all of that, but nobody was endangered by it. Mm-hmm. And it's relatively common to have eruptions. This is part of what I'm noticing, is that everyone is more aware of disasters now, but not necessarily aware that they've always been happening. There's about 40 to 60 eruptions every year.
Well, I guess
there's something erupting right now, guaranteed. There's a whole bunch of volcanoes erupting today.
I mean, do you find, Mika, though, that people just get used to whatever the disaster is local to them? People in the Midwest, especially south of here, are used to the idea that there's going to be tornadoes. You are used to the idea that there are going to be earthquakes. And so we just kind of build that into our routine. This thing that we've got going on, nobody ever prepared or dealt with this before. So this is throwing us all off more than an earthquake or things like that.
Absolutely. There's a very, very strong correlation, a very big connection between the disasters you grew up with and thus have a lot of familiarity with, or you learned about them in school, so you did all the drills. Like, I grew up on the West Coast. If a big truck goes past, I dive under a table and hold on to it, because drop cover hold on has been a drill on an annual basis, just like going on a fire drill was. But then I was out east, and there was a blizzard coming in, and I could not handle the countdown to doom. I found it very stressful. I don't get storms like that. So that unfamiliarity versus familiarity, it's a big part of it. Unfortunately, we're all developing more familiarity with how to respond to a pandemic and how to deal with a pandemic. And the upside of that is humans adapt really fast. We figure out what the new normal looks like, and then we kind of just roll with it and figure out how to make it. This is how it is. This is how it's always been. The younger kids are going to adapt to it even faster. There's little toddlers running around right now who their normal is other people only exist in screens, that their entire world is just their immediate families.
Which is sad, though. I mean, we don't want them to grow up living like that, right? We're hoping that we're going to get back to, I mean, are you hopeful that there's going to be a return to normalcy, or do you think normal is going to have a different meaning 6 months from now?
I think it's going to take a very long time, and if we try and move too fast, it's going to backfire on us, and we're just going to have wave upon wave upon wave of death, and I'd really like to avoid that.
Yeah.
So I can tell you that there's all these memes going around, what's the first thing you're going to do when the shelter-in-place restrictions lift? The first thing I'm going to do is stay sheltered in place.
You're not going to the block
it.
Party?
I'm going to wait out and be like, okay, cool, let's see how this goes.
Yeah.
I am not going to be the first one out there. So what normal will look like after this, I hope it changes, quite honestly, because we have a lot of opportunities in this to deal with the other extremely large ongoing disaster of our times, otherwise known as climate change. But right now we're doing a lot of really big institutional and structural changes that we've never had the political will to do before, that we're finally being forced into this position. Maybe we can start rethinking. I am Canadian, so I'm also looking at the U.S. and going, maybe you'll take this opportunity to rethink your healthcare system and realize that it is not negotiable to have healthcare. So normal is definitely going to change. How it changes, I don't know. I'm scared about losing all the small businesses.
Yeah,
I really don't want that to happen. I would like to still, you know, see other human beings on a regular basis. We're social creatures. And when it comes to dealing with things like hurricanes or floods or earthquakes or anything else, we need help. We can't do it alone.
Yeah.
It is not feasible for individuals to prepare for everything. It's a reoccurring idea in disaster preparedness that we survive together or you die alone. It's you work together towards a common goal and help each other out and support each other and share resources. You're not going to make it.
You were talking earlier about all the disasters that kind of could happen up where you live. An earthquake leads to a tsunami and the nuclear reactors. Yet you still, do you ever think, maybe I should live here because you think so much about these things? Or are you just very kind of, you just have to be prepared and keep living your life and what happens, happens. It's just how we react to it.
I happen to live on a piece of bedrock in a community that has been recognized by the United Nations for how well it prepares for disasters. I am very extremely strategically located.
Now, is that because you live there, or were they like that and that's why you moved there?
Little column A, little column B. There's a very large number of geoscientists who happen to live in this community. We happen to live in this community because it is bedrock, but because we're all here, we have very vested interest in making it better. So There are advantages to living near a whole bunch of disaster scientists.
Yeah, I would imagine there would be. That's all. I never asked the realtor that when we're buying a new house. What's the geoscientist population of this area? They deem it safe. That's what I'm wondering.
Yes, exactly. My mother is in an even safer area than me. I'm vaguely jealous of it. But it's, I mean, everywhere has disasters, right?
Right.
It's what you were saying before. It depends what you're used to, what you're prepared for, what sort of resources you have in your environment. There's different things in different places. You don't have much earthquake risk in Chicago, but you have to deal with severe storm more often. That Florida has to deal with hurricanes on a regular basis, but they get to skip out on the giant fires that California has. That everywhere has different aspects going on and has different responses to that.
Yeah. So we only have a couple minutes left. So let me run through some of your other specialties, because we talked about tsunamis. We talked about earthquakes. You also study asteroid impacts. And we talk about this from time to time on the show. I think we've got a 1.2 million away one coming pretty soon. Do you think that, you know, we keep hearing about these near misses, which are really far misses, but they seem near because if they change just a little bit in course, they could head towards us. Do you think we're due for something hitting us, or you think we're pretty safe?
I think we're fairly safe. Like, we do a very good job of tracking the biggest asteroids. It is easy for the very small asteroids to slip by. So things like, do you remember in Russia where they had the big impact of that? It was an air blast. It was small enough. Yeah, exactly. It was small enough that it air blasted, so it exploded when it was still near. It never even hit the ground. But that explosion created a pressure wave that was enough to, like, break a whole bunch of windows, and anyone who was looking out the window at the time suddenly had a wall of shattered glass in their face.
Yeah.
So it can still be dangerous. If you really want to get into that particular chunk, I will put on my science per fiction hat and say I was a consultant on a show called No Tomorrow. It's a romantic comedy about the end of the world, and it has incredibly accurate asteroid dynamics in it. You could actually run a graduate level course on the last couple of episodes on all the forms of orbital interception that you can do. I wrote a thesis as a prop. So you can binge watch a romantic comedy about asteroid impacts.
And that was called, again, No Tomorrow.
No Tomorrow. It's called No Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
The one thing I do wish we'd do more about asteroid impact is it is the one natural disaster that we can completely and fully mitigate, that we can take our risk and drop it all the way to zero. But it requires a lot of advanced planning because we need to build tools that we currently do not have.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And
is
the sooner,
if they said, oh, 6 months from now, one's coming and it's going to hit us, would we be able to stop that in time? Or right now, would you say, yeah, we don't have the tools to do it?
We do not at this moment. I don't know if we could develop them that fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, if the choice was our planet is going to be uninhabitable or not, then I think we'd come up with some last-ditch plans. Mm-hmm. But on the upside, anything big enough to take out the planet, we are tracking.
Right.
So the things that we would be worried about are more things that are not even a city-destroying impact event, but a window-shattering event are the things that we're more worried about. Mm-hmm. So damaging and inconvenient, but not catastrophic.
Okay. Well, that we can handle. I mean, you know, you don't want any loss of life or injury, but a window shattering here and there, that's just kind of cool, right? But you know, disaster we've had enough of. It's been 2020's been a bit of a year already. I don't think we need to get any further if we can avoid it.
What I am really concerned about, considering that we're only in April, I'm really worried how many more things are going to happen that by the time July rolls around, we'll be like, wait, what do you mean we were worried only about that in April? We have way bigger problems now.
If we're looking back at April and saying that was nothing, then this is just the worst year in history. Let's face it. This has already been, you're right, we're in month four. We haven't even completed a third of the year yet. And this is probably one of the worst years of all of our lifetimes that we can remember, unless you've had other personal tragedies. But as far as worldwide, we've had some disasters and some tragedies, but this is going on to be the one we'll talk about pretty much. This is our Great Depression, right, for our generation that we will talk about forever. So let's hope that we're just getting all the bad stuff out of the way early. And, you know, it's like having our green beans at the beginning of the year, and then hopefully the chocolate cake is coming later on.
Exactly, exactly. And, I mean, there is a lot you can do right now to kind of hedge against things getting worse. You can do a lot of personal disaster preparedness. You can do a lot of disaster preparedness from home without any like extra spending or anything like that. Just making plans actually does a whole lot to make you more safe.
Yeah.
So if you're freaking out, if you're having like that huge anxiety, doing things like finding local officials and emergency management agencies on social media and hit follow is a great idea. Making a plan of what would you do if the fire alarm went off in your building is a great idea. If you have a pet, take a picture of you with your pet and post it online. That is a form of disaster preparedness because we use it as a form of backup ID if you and your pet are ever separated during an evacuation. Like, there's a lot of small little tweaks you can do that just up your odds of survival a little bit more. And you can, we can do this. We can handle this. We got it, sort of.
I appreciate that we're ending on an uplifting note. You're right. We can get through this, and there are small things we can do every day to make ourselves a little bit safer. Mika McKinnon, thank you so much for jumping on with us tonight.
Thank you for chatting with me. Have a fantastic evening.
You too. We'll talk again sometime soon. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN.